Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by John Challenger, Jonathan Honig, and Northwestern University professor John McCarron. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on the Sirius XM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289 if you'd like to email us a comment. Our email address is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com for the audio and video streaming portion of the broadcast. Well, last week, the government announced that in the third quarter, gross domestic product was at 3.5, and that was considered to be good news by the government at a time when 9.8% is the unemployment at the national level. And yet today, when Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner was on one of the Sunday morning shows, he suggested that insofar as the unemployment rate in the country, that we will have to look to the first quarter of next year before we see any further turning around of that figure. This obviously is causing the economy to lag somewhat. And again, in big news that broke just recently in the last several hours, one of the fifth largest banks and lenders in the United States has filed for bankruptcy. That is CIT, not Citigroup, but CIT, which is a different entity. John Challenger, one of your jobs is you look at jobs. You are a creator of jobs, and you're trying to find jobs for people who are looking for work. As you look at the unemployment rate, what's likely to happen in the next 3 to 6 months? Are you as optimistic as the Treasury Secretary that things are turning around?
Well, no, I'm not, certainly from a jobs standpoint. So I believe we're in a period of jobless recovery right now. In the 91, in the aftermath of the 1991 recession, it took 15 months of jobless recovery with unemployment kind of staying stagnant before we started to see unemployment improve, get better. After the 2001 recession, it was actually 19 months of jobless recovery. I think we're now into that period. Say the economy came out of recession in the third quarter, as this GDP number showed, I don't think we're going to see unemployment start to drop probably till the end of 2010.
Jonathan Honig also joins us. He is a hedge fund manager known as the Capitalist Pig, wrote the book Greed is Good many years ago. Nice to have you,
Thank you.
On the broadcast.
Thank you, Bruce. Great to be with you.
What's your reaction to these figures that were released last week on the growth of gross national product? And then, of course, the bad news about the unemployment rate.
Well, Bruce, to be honest, I think your first problem is trusting anything that Tim Geithner says. I say that with a lot of respect, certainly for you and for him. But, you know, Tim Geithner, this man seems so knowledgeable about the future economy and growth and jobs. He, of course, missed the entire collapse from his perch as head of the New York Fed. And he's the guy who started basically the bailout bonanza that we're seeing the net result of. I mean, you mentioned CIT going bankrupt. Unfortunately, they're going bankrupt with over $2 billion of taxpayer monies. That type of bailout agenda has really been what Tim Geithner has been about since he put the first, $30 billion into AIG. Now we're a year plus down the line, it's $100+ billion in AIG. So I guess as long as Tim Geithner and others who are really advocates for intervention into a free economy are running the ship, I don't think unemployment's going to get better anytime soon.
John McCarron also joins us, longtime columnist with the Chicago Tribune, now with the Medill School of Journalism. Also for many, many years, you write periodically for the Trib. Now you're primarily an adjunct professor up at Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. Do you agree with Jonathan that maybe we should be aware of Tim Geithner and what he says?
No, I don't. I don't think the BLS or the Department of Treasury are in on the con. I think the statistics are the statistics, and I don't think you mean to represent that we can't trust the data coming out of the Department of Labor and whatnot. I do sort of sympathize. I mean, he wouldn't have been my choice for Treasury Secretary because he and Alan Greenspan et al. And Mr. Paulson were.
Well, I don't think Jonathan said he didn't trust the figures. He didn't trust Tim Geithner.
Didn't trust Geithner.
Or his interpretation of the figures.
Actually, Bruce, technically, I mean, he sort of slid from one to the other from his distrust. He started saying he didn't distrust the numbers and then criticized Geithner fairly, I think, to some extent, because as I say, he was present when a lot of the really bad things that went wrong were becoming a bubble.
I mean, I might not agree with that. I do think that the approach towards taking some of these banking organizations, our financial system, and pouring money in to try and keep them from falling apart is actually both a Republican and a Democratic policy. This started with Paulson and the Bush administration, the TARP funding, and it's moved on into the Obama administration. If we hadn't done that, if we'd let after the Lehman collapse the banking system fall apart, and it was within minutes of falling apart, the country wouldn't be where it is now.
We don't know though, John.
Certainly the run of the stock market we've had now.
Well, of course, we don't know that. And proponents of stimulus, proponents of intervention, they say, see, things worked. You know, the economy didn't collapse. And yes, I guess the lights still go on, the ATMs still work. But at the end of the day, you know, you look at whether it's $15 billion in GMAC flushed down the tubes, $60 billion in GM. I mean, I see that as money that was wasted that could be working now to start the next Microsoft, the next Cisco, actually build growth instead of just enlarging the entitlement state.
I think the last 50 years of economic experience indicate that the government has got to step in with the private economy is about to go down the drain. And I mean down the drain. I mean, but it just doesn't make sense to me that you would be saying it wasn't worth doing at all, because we were on the cusp of nothing working, of a financial meltdown.
In fact, John, the economy fell at the fastest clip since the Great Depression in the fourth quarter, really the first quarter of 2009. And that was just in the aftermath of the Lehman collapse. If we had then let some of the other organizations collapse, Morgan Stanley was on the verge of collapsing.
Gentlemen,
who knows what we'd
be? Before we spend too much time arguing about what has already been done, let me look a little bit ahead. How will you know, Jonathan, how will you feel comfortable that the economy is turning around? And when we talk about the economy turning around, does that mean more people are going to be working?
Unfortunately, Bruce, I think it's very difficult now because the government is such a major player in the economy. I mean, that's what's really changed, not the hundreds of billions of dollars that's been wasted, but, you know, 18 months later, the economy is really not being run on Wall Street. It's being run out of Washington. And everything from interest rates to who has to pay their mortgage, who doesn't, to the types of products financial services companies can offer, I mean, those decisions are all being made in Washington right now. I think it makes it especially hard when analyzing securities, which is what I do, because from the Help for Homeowners Act to stays on foreclosure, to all these cash for clunkers, I don't trust the numbers anymore. I think that they're frankly being manipulated by all this government intervention, all these bailouts, all this stimulus. So even when you get a good number, I think it's hard to believe it in this environment.
I want to get everybody's reaction to that. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Taking America's Political Pulse. Tonight, we're talking about the economy. And later on in the broadcast, we're going to be talking about health care. Back shortly from Chicago.
Of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $1,667 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
From Burbank, California to Burbank, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to a telephone call, and it's Dan listening to us on our flagship station, WLS in Chicago. Go ahead, you're on the air.
How are you, gentlemen?
Okay.
Two questions. How would you assess the private debt and government debt, or civilian debt and government debt currently? And can you make any comparisons to the current economy in relationship to the 1970s, the mid-70s in particular?
Jonathan Honig.
Well, we haven't seen the inflation. We've actually seen deflation. But you talk to money managers, and certainly if you follow the dollar, you know, what are some of the hottest investments right now? Are inflation hedges. You know, it's why you're seeing, I want to say Wilford Brimley, but it's not. Who is it? So it's the guy from Watergate selling gold, you know, on TV all the time, or G. Gordon Liddy selling gold. You know, inflation hedges are very popular right now. And although, you know, a lot of folks are taking victory laps about the effect of the stimulus and the bailouts. Well, hey, the market's up. Yes, the stock market's up, but the value of our currency, literally the purchasing power of the assets in our pocket, is actually way down this year. So I think a lot of folks are anticipating kind of a 70s redo once inflation starts rearing its head.
John Challenger?
Well, no question. You know, private debt, public debt are just out of control, and this country is going to have to come to grips with those two issues. Maybe not in this short term as we're trying to get the economy back in gear, and maybe we're seeing some faint signs of that now. We don't know whether it's for real or not yet, but we're going to have to deal with the debt problem soon enough.
John McCarron?
I think another difference, too, is that during the 70s, I think there was always a sense that there was an economy to come back to. I think the real fear that's out there now is that there's been so much structural erosion in our means of production, what with all the outsourcing and the rise of China and other cheaper labor markets, that there's a real fear that there's not the manufacturing base, certainly, to go back to that there was back in the 70s.
What is, you know, we have seen over the last, certainly, you know, couple of years, we've seen the government step in and deal with the banking industry, securities industry, the automobile industry. Years and years ago, it was the airline industry. In the wake of 9/11, what's the next industry? Is there any industry out there that basically is going to be told no by the federal government? When their time comes, when their Waterloo comes, is somebody going to be told no by the federal government? Or have we created this automatic expectation now that when you really get down, Uncle Sam's going to be there to help you out? Jonathan?
Yes, it's called collectivism, and it's in sharp contrast to the notion of rugged individualism, a.k.a. capitalism, Bruce, on which this country is founded. I think there is a sense now that although, you know, your listeners didn't invest in Bear Stearns, they didn't invest in AIG, hey, we're all in it together. So, yes, when one person needs a bailout, needs health insurance, needs an education, needs a car, needs food, needs anything, it's the responsibility of the public, you know, society, to provide it for them. So, yes, I think as long as and I think John is absolutely right. It started under Paulson, certainly, and the former president, but I think it's continued under the current administration, this notion that everyone owes the public whatever demands they happen to make.
Jonathan Challenger.
Well, so, you know, my sense—
John Challenger.
Thanks.
We got Jonathan and two Johns, okay.
So my sense is that the banking, you know, the financial system is so much of a foundation, you know, of what our economy is built on. We need banks that are healthy, that can lend out to small businesses to create the jobs that are missing right now. We can't have that job creation without small business turning around. That means a healthy banking system. We may have gone too far in bailing out the auto industry, and certainly the issue of moral hazard, which is you can take any risk you want and the government's going to bail out, has to be pulled back. Certainly we can't operate in this country under that kind of system.
John?
Well, I've got to nominate the healthcare industry as one that's going to have to go on a diet. That it's been nice to have that sector growing in terms of jobs over the last year, while every other sector was contracting. But long run, the healthcare industry, I think, can't continue on to be almost 20% of the economy. It's going to have to be scaled back so we can have some wherewithal for the other things we need to do.
I want to go back to by the way, the figures that were last week, the figures that were released, this was based on a survey of those who had already been recipients of $160 billion in stimulus dollars. That's a small drop in the bucket as to what the stimulus bill was going to be. So if we are at 3.5% growth in the third quarter, representing only $160 billion, or not only, but $160 billion, let's look ahead. When all the stimulus money is now spent, it's now out there, it's now doing whatever it's supposed to be doing, creating jobs and all this other stuff, what is the likely reaction to the GDP when those surveys come out 3 months from now, when we have another survey for the last quarter?
Economy gets worse. Economy gets much worse.
Not necessarily. I think Larry Summers, advisor to the president, says we need to achieve something called exit speed, the speed at which something can leave the atmosphere and go on its own.
But take a step back. I mean, if spending money creates wealth, let's have a stimulus program, Bruce, every 2 weeks. Let's spend $100 zillion and we can make everyone a multimillionaire.
Well, that's painting the other side ridiculous.
But honestly, isn't that the philosophy behind the stimulus, that government spending creates wealth?
Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover tried the do-nothing scenario. It didn't work. And I'm not saying FDR got us out of the depression overnight, but government stimulus is pump priming. It does work. But Bruce correctly points out that you can't continue to prime with money that you don't have. And as John says, at some point, this thing's got to be throttled back, and either taxes have got to be raised spending cut, as you would prefer.
But also, I mean, when you look at a program that at least some people are calling a success, the Cars for Clunkers, which may be feeding some of these third quarter positive numbers, what's it going to be like in the fourth quarter when there's no incentive anymore?
Well, that is
is the average person just sitting there, you know what? They're going to come back with this program again. I'm just going to wait.
This is the big issue. You know, is the stimulus going to help bridge us through this period, getting us out of recession? And will the engine of this economy then spark and start moving on its own? What's going to cause that to happen? Or is the economy going to peter out? Are we going to go back into recession if the stimulus money dissipates, when it dissipates? That's a big question for 2010.
Yeah, but, you know, reality exists. And that's what I think the government doesn't understand. And, you know, Bruce, you're right. Clunkers did cause a short-term pop. And the homeowner tax credit did cause a short-term pop. The question is once all those artificial stimuluses go away, does the market and the economy actually revert to where it needs to be in the first place? You know, we've poured a lot of money into propping up real estate prices in this country. The net result is that prices have still corrected, you know, 30-40% in some areas. So I guess in my mind, trying to fake reality for the benefit of a couple selected constituencies is literally throwing money down the drain.
Well, I want to also come back to something that we've talked a lot about on this program, because we go back to, as you say, John, you've argued, I think, correctly, is that you look at the core. I mean, if the banks and the stock market is not working, if the banks are not working, we got big, big problems. And so that warrants, that is cataclysmic, and the government steps in and we try to save banks. Some we save, some we don't save. But in sending money out to the banks, at least initially, there was no string attached to those dollars. The average taxpayer might have thought, hey, okay, my local bank that's in trouble, they're going to get money, and when I need a loan, I'm going to go to them, and I'm going to get that money back to me. Well, we now know that hasn't happened. It hasn't happened to any significant way. When will we see from banks actions that will provide more capital into the system to people to expand their businesses, build things, and create jobs, which was the initial goal. At least I thought that's what the taxpayers thought.
Well, no, I think it is the goal, and I don't think we're there yet. This system was almost killed off. I mean, our economy then going with it, it's still an extremely wounded banking system. We know that smaller banks, not the TARP banks, are, and there are many smaller banks that, that have TARP funds, right now are going to go through major difficulties in 2000, the beginning of 2010 with their commercial real estate portfolios. So these banks still are in very difficult condition. The medicine, you know, has not worked its way into creating health in the banking system.
But yes. what happened? Explain to us in simple terms if you can. I'll let everybody sort of weigh in on this one. The money that went, let's focus on the banks that received TARP dollars. The money, billions of dollars went to them. What did they do with that money? Because we've heard stories about that they went out and bought more banks. They bought smaller banks. We heard stories about how they've given raises to their employees for doing a good job. I don't know why, but they, you know, they had a contract, so they met some. What are they doing with that money, Jonathan Honig?
Well, they're showing up their own balance sheets, and they're also stealing out of the pockets of hardworking Americans who, as I said, didn't feel obligated to invest in any of these, you know, basket case banks to begin with. And Bruce, I think what you're expressing is an opinion that's felt by a lot of folks, right? All these rich Wall Street bankers got bailouts. Where's my loan? That, to me, is the real long-lasting danger. I don't care if unemployment goes to 15 or 5, is that all of a sudden these favors from the government, it's kind of like getting a favor from the mob. They come around asking to be paid up. So now we have, you know, and listen, I'm not a banker, but I would trust a banker, even at one at Citigroup, to make better decisions about loans to make than, with all due respect, Barney Frank or, you know, those on the right, anyone in government. But that's the position that we're in right now, is the government making these decisions, not private industry.
You
that's what really worries me.
You trusted the bankers at Citigroup 2 years ago? How were they doing 2 years ago? Did you appreciate the kind of loans they were making then?
I didn't invest.
Collateralized debt.
Well, you know, John, I obviously didn't invest with them, and that was my problem. I mean, all of a sudden, what Citigroup and AIG and all these companies were doing only became my problem when government stepped in to bail them out. So, you know, Bruce, what are they doing with their money? I don't know, but I tell you, I'm frustrated and annoyed that I don't have a right to not give it to them.
I want to get your reaction. 1-800-723-8029. Got lots of callers on the line, but there's room for you. Back shortly from Chicago.
Inside this truck are some very special batteries, because these batteries are going to the Mattel Children's Hospital, UCLA, where they know that making kids better takes all kinds of technologically advanced equipment. And quite a few Hot Wheels and Barbies and Polly Pockets. So to power all those toys, the people at Duracell pack that truck full of batteries. Because they know nothing's better than powering a smile. Duracell. Trusted everywhere.
Wow. Whoa. What is this? A trap on our front lawn?
Yeah, it's a trap. I'm going to catch that stack of money with the googly eyes right there, the money I could be saving with Geico.
But it's right there in front of you. Just get it.
Psh, where's the fun in that? Then I wouldn't get to use these 200-pound springs or these laser sensors.
Well, it'd be a lot easier to just call Geico. I mean, it's what normal people do.
Well, then I guess I'm just more adventurous than most.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let me introduce our guest this evening. First of all, John McCarron is here. For 27 years, he was with the Chicago Tribune. He's now with the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. He also writes a monthly column in the editorial pages of the Chicago Tribune, and is one of the country's leading journalists in the area of urban affairs and what's happening in urban America. Always great to be with us on our broadcast. Jonathan Honig also joins us. He is managing member at Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund. That's a private investment partnership for net worth individuals. And also, he is author of the book Greed is Good, which was called one of the best business books of the year back in 1999, and a frequent visitor on a variety of programs. You also wrote, tell us a little bit about, you write a column for?
For smartmoney.com.
So, and you're also on Fox Business Channel.
Yeah, I'm a regular contributor on Fox News Channel on programs
WLS
like
in Chicago.
Hannity, O'Reilly, and of course my website is capitalistpig.com.
Very good. Also joining us this evening is John Challenger, an old friend of this program. He's the chief executive officer of Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. And in 50 words or less, tell us what your company does.
Well, we're an outplacement and executive coaching firm. So when companies let people go, today they take care of them. They send them to us. We help them find jobs. Then we also coach executives from companies.
And when somebody gets laid off from a Fortune 500 company today, what good news do you give them? I mean, how do you prepare them for, they're obviously looking at the business pages and reading the, you know, the dire news, and these are people who are six- and seven-figure employees, are they not?
Well, they can be, although we may do downsizings when companies close plants as well. And so you have to help them be optimistic. You can say it's certainly tougher out there right now than it was 2 or 3 years ago when the economy was growing. And yet the people who work hardest at their search and they work at the right kinds of things continue to find jobs.
During the break, you were talking about there's been so much focus on the banks that receive the TARP funds that not enough has been said about some of the banks that maybe didn't make that initial cut. And I want to let you give that opportunity to share that with the audience.
Well, banks continue to fail in this country, you know, at a very high rate. So it wasn't just Lehman that there's still questions about whether that should have been done, but they were certainly creating moral hazard when they did do that. They let Lehman fail and the economy took a nosedive in September. Just today, the CIT has been announced. That's a major financial organization. The bank isn't coming to rescue that, and we have lots of small banks that continue to fail every week all over the country. So the financial industry is going through massive change, and lots of companies are paying the price for the heavy risks they took.
And also last week in Illinois, where we do this broadcast from, Park National Bank, which is owned by Michael Kelly, who has been described as the richest man in Illinois by Crain Chicago Business, his bank is now in deep trouble. They were closed down. Chorus Bank has been closed down. And also a bank, John, that I know we mentioned that you were involved in urban affairs writing, one of the most innovative banks in the Chicagoland, maybe even in the nation, is a bank called Shore Bank. Now, they're still alive. They're struggling to survive. But tell us what's unique about them and why it would be devastating if a bank like that were to have serious problems.
Well, Shore Bank, I think, was founded by Ron Gerswinski about 30 years ago, and with the idea of undoing the harm that redlining was doing in the inner city neighborhoods where credit was hard to get, mortgages were hard to get, business loans were hard to get. And they decided to reevaluate small borrowers to see if they had a business plan and whatnot, and they started making small loans to small businesses in neighborhoods that the big lenders didn't want to touch. And unfortunately, they're going through some real hard times. And the same could be said, to some extent, of Park National, which, of course, is the old Pullman Bank here in Chicago, and which was doing a lot of lending in the inner city and had actually big plans to do a lot more.
So small loans to small banks to grow small loans to small businesses, which create jobs.
Exactly.
And these are now suffering and we're not the recipient of any government largesse. Jonathan Honig?
Well, I mean, Bruce, I think it's important to point out that it's terrible when any business fails, but unfortunately, I think what's going to be put forth is that all these bank failures are the result of a free, unregulated marketplace, right? This is capitalism gone amok. This is greed gone amok. So we need, you know, government to step in and kind of manage this sector of the economy. That's kind of been the justification, I think, for the fact that the government's now the major owner in the financial sector. I think what's important for people to realize is that banking finance has not been a free market, has not been a capitalist system for quite some time. So it's not surprising to see Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you know, all these companies that people say are just, you know, free market, you know, greedy excess SOBs. These are government regulated, government registered institutions. They're the ones that are failing.
Let's go back to calls. George in Schaumburg listening to us on WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks for taking the call. Longtime listener. Jonathan, you are right on. I watch you on Fox a lot, and I think you are hitting the target every time. You know, it seems like the government has been, regardless of the party, by the way, doing everything in its power over the last 20 or 30 years to take away freedoms that exist within the capitalist system and basically set us up for failure. You know, there's an old saying in industry, and I'm an industry executive for about 35 years, now in academia, and I can tell you this. You tell me what the rules are, and I'll tell you how I'm going to behave. And the government has set the rules, and the people on Wall Street and in industry behave accordingly to get around the rules. And that's exactly what's been going on for many years, and that's why we're in the mess that we're in. The government today is no better than it was under Bush. Both parties are guilty as hell, and I think that if we continue down this road, what we're going to see is the dollar's going to collapse, and then we're really going to have problems. What do you guys think?
John Challenger respond first.
Well, certainly, you bring up at the very end one of the big risks in the system. I don't think it's going to happen, tomorrow. But there is more and more discussion about the dollar being the world currency. You know, can it survive? Are the Chinese beginning to go after the dollar? Concerned about the dollar's viability? So it has been falling, and we'll see. That would be catastrophic for this country.
Jonathan Honig.
Yeah, I mean, I recently bought a bunch of $100 trillion Zimbabwe bills off eBay. You can get them. And they say they got 12 and 12 zeros. And, you know, the thing that's so sneaky about a dollar devaluation, Bruce, is that we fear that one day collapse, right? We're going to wake up and all of a sudden our money's going to be worth this. It happens very slowly. In the past 10 years, the Dow has been flatlined, while the value of our currency, even the last 10 years, is down 25%. So, yes, I think as long as the caller, obviously I appreciate his comments, I think as long as this country moves away from those free market principles based on individual property rights, the currency is in real peril.
John, in your view, politically, what's happening in this country with this discussion, with this growing fear, with unemployment, with so much fear out there, so much anger out there, what's happening to the people? What's happening in the country, in your view?
I think that you could look back to the 1930s and see what's happening. I think it's happening again. Feeling of enormous unease and insecurity, anger, as you say, a feeling that my children won't have as good a life as I was able to achieve. And people are grasping for answers to this predicament, which is really overwhelming in many respects, globalization and whatnot. And they're reaching out to people who seem to provide answers. And if you remember in the 30s, there was Father Coughlin, who did radio out of Detroit. And there was Huey Long down in Louisiana. There was a Bavarian house painter, I forget his name, over in Germany, who thought he had the answer to what was wrong. This is a very dangerous time, I think, in American history, because there is so much anger and there's so many talented people out there who are willing to sort of take advantage of that anger.
And do you think those who are criticizing President Obama? I mean, we talked before we went on the air about Rush Limbaugh. He was on Fox News Sunday today, just excoriated the president. Is he part of a healthy debate? If indeed there is significant and real anger out there, what's wrong with having someone who is really expressing that in an articulate way? Granted, a pointed way, but in an articulate way.
Well, you'd like to hear a discussion of policy using facts and figures and numbers. All I heard this morning from Rush Limbaugh on Fox was slander, really, and a bunch of name-calling. I mean, he refers to the state-controlled media. Is that just hyperbole, or is he really saying that the media in this country is, quote-unquote, state-controlled? I mean, he's just flying off the handle with all these accusations. He's very good at it. He's a very, very talented speaker and a rhetorician, but he's learned how to commercialize anger to the tune. What he's working on a $400 million contract was disclosed this morning. So he's found a way to monetize the anger.
Jonathan, I want to get everybody else's reaction to that same question. Where do you think the people are right now?
I don't know, Bruce, honestly. I mean, I think people are frustrated. I think they're confused. And unfortunately, I think what's being presented to them is this belief that business is evil, that capitalism is evil. And the change that we've heard so much about is really a change away from that. I mean, you know, I'm almost embarrassed now and ashamed. You feel a sense of shame. We tell people, what do? I manage money. Well, you're part of the problem. And I think there's this sense that, you know, people believe that business people, profit-seeking business people, if given the chance, would kind of burn down the world. That's the environment, I think, unfortunately, in which, you know, this country is in right now. And you know, it's been propagated by those on the left, but also those on the right. I mean, where, in my opinion, the GOP, for example, has lost the whole debate on health care is, you know, they're saying, let's get government out of health care as long as we keep our Medicare benefits. I mean, it's not a consistent pro-free markets perspective. That's why I think they can't get a leg up in today's environment.
John Challenger, I want to get your reaction. We do have to break. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont.
100 years of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. John Challenger, I want to get your reaction. You deal with a lot of people who've lost their jobs, many of whom are probably well-paid or executive-level people. What's their mood? When they come to you after they've lost their job, are they angry?
Well, some of them certainly are. Often they feel betrayed. And what's happening now with the recession is the number of people who are long-term unemployed, more than 27 weeks, is skyrocketing. I'm not getting as many people into my program now as I was during that period 9 months ago. But usually by now, those people would have found jobs. More of them would have found jobs. So right now in this country, we have 5.4 million people who are out of work more than 27 weeks. And a rate that's called the underemployment rate, people who are either unemployed or in jobs that they prefer were better, that made more money, that were not just part-time, or people who'd looked for a job in the last year but haven't found one, is now at 17%. So that gets back to people are becoming very worried that they're not going to find another job at the kind of compensation that they had. They're not going to be able to hold on to the lifestyles that they built in the last period of expansion, or maybe throughout their career. So we may be in a watershed time where people are really beginning to change how they think about work and what they can get out of the workplace in terms of income.
Jonathan Honig, I mentioned you wrote a book in 1998 called Greed is Good. In the wake of the economic situation that we're in the wake of taxpayer dollars that were given to banks and the controversy over the last couple of months now about the compensation, the elevated compensation that many of those recipient banks are now giving bonuses to their chief executives and to their executive core, and the government's now involvement with a paymaster, and they're saying, what you can do. I think that it's an average of about $500,000 a year. What, in your view, is the responsible thing for an individual who's on the receiving end of a huge bonus now, working for a bank that's been bailed out by the taxpayers? Should they accept it? Should they be proud? Should they say, this is good? Do they understand the perception? Do they care about the perception? Take us inside the mind of someone who is in a position like that. Because I think the average person watching or listening to this broadcast this evening probably can't comprehend how they would feel.
I'm not getting a big bonus this year, Bruce, unfortunately, so I wish I could comprehend what that felt like. But, you know, the bonus uproar is the next step in, a year ago it was AIG's executive retreats, right? Then it was Citigroup's jet. So over the, since the bailouts began, people have had a lot of very populist, totally understandably, anger about where their tax dollars are going.
So are those people bad people?
Are
they bad people?
No, I don't think they're bad people at all. No, I don't. I absolutely don't think they're bad people at all. I don't. I mean, in fact, many of those people are the most productive parts of society, the most productive elements of society. I mean, I think, there's this sense that folks on Wall Street, well, they don't produce anything tangible, right? They just push a button. couple of buttons and, you know, make money. There's not a lot of respect, I think, for people these days who work with their heads, not with their hands. And, you know, unfortunately, the fact that, you know, we have chosen to bail them out has really obfuscated their benefit
John
to
McCarron,
society.
Are those people bad people?
They're not bad people, Bruce. Unfortunately, there's a situation where the bad people kind of got away. The mortgage brokers who convinced barely financially literate people of limited means to take out mortgages under the deal where they weren't going to have to pay anything in the first 2 years, et cetera, not knowing that these mortgages would reset and whatnot. I mean, millions and if not billions of dollars were made earlier in this decade by people pushing money like cocaine. Why that was allowed to go on for so long, I don't know. But I suspect if we're looking for someone who's a bad person, it's probably those mortgage brokers
so
who
funny,
sold
John,
those kind
John,
of loans.
It's so funny. You love it when Shore Bank does it, right? You love it when Shore Bank gives loans to lower income folks. But when an unscrupulous mortgage broker does it, well, then they're
Shore
they're
Bank
evil.
Is not unscrupulous, but many of the mortgage brokers were. And like I say, Bruce, they got away.
Let's go to Waukegan, Illinois. Joe is listening to us on the internet tonight. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I've heard of this thing called the law of supply and demand. And I want to refer it to you on Obama's energy policy. In the summer of 2008, oil hit $150 a barrel because of the speculators going crazy, at which point President Bush lifted the executive ban on oil drilling offshore and in other places. The price immediately stopped climbing, and it began to fall, and it was down to $30 a barrel by January of this year. President Obama reinstated that ban, and it is now closed Friday over $82 a barrel. Now, bearing in mind the law of supply and demand, and everybody knew that this had to be the effect, why did he reinstate it? If we're going to have a recovery, it's got to be on cheap energy. This is absolutely necessary.
John Challenger.
Well, I think the issue of why the price went up and why it came down is more complicated than that, but certainly it was a factor in the decision. And I think you're hitting then on a larger issue. This country, we have to come to terms with energy. Right now, we are not prepared for the kinds of energy issues we're going to face over the next decade. We have to become more energy independent. We can't continue to rely on countries that are our enemies supplying us with oil and gas. In fact, right now, at 12 billion barrels a day, it is damaging our economy in the extreme.
Sir, thanks very much for your call. That is it for hour number one of our broadcast. Joining us in the first hour, John McCarron of the Medill School of Journalism, John Challenger has been with us, and Jonathan Honig have been with us. They will all be back for hour number two. We're going to continue our discussion of the economy. We're going to slide into a discussion of healthcare in the next hour. And if we have time permitting, we're going to be talking about President Obama's trip to see the returning servicemen who came back after paying the ultimate price, his visit to Dover, Delaware. A lot of controversy about it. We'll talk about it in the next hour. 1-800-723-8029. The phone lines remain open for the next hour. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. And if you're listening to us on radio, we'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
Inside this truck are some very special batteries, because these batteries are going to the Mattel Children's Hospital, UCLA, where they know that making kids better takes all kinds of technologically advanced equipment, and quite a few Hot Wheels and Barbies and Polly Pockets. So to power all those toys, the people at Duracell pack that truck full of batteries, because they know nothing's better than powering a smile. Duracell, trusted everywhere.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Okay, with us today is that stack of money with the giant googly eyes. The money you could be saving with Geico. Tell me, it's really easy to get you. You just go to geico.com, right? Let's try two blinks for yes and one for no. Wait, did you just blink twice or once? Because I blinked and I missed it. Ugh, I keep blinking.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Nowadays, all sorts of people are changing their oil.
Motor oil?
Check.
Funnel?
Check.
Hey, champ, don't put the funnel on your head.
Doing your own oil change is a great way to save money. With Walmart's unbeatable prices on Castrol, Mobil 1, Pennzoil, and Valvoline, you could save even more.
All done. Piece of cake.
More people are changing their oil. With Walmart's unbeatable prices, they're changing where they get it, too. Save money, live better, Walmart. We will match the price of any local competitor's printout for an identical product. See store for details.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight, featuring commentary by executive John Challenger, hedge fund manager Jonathan Honig, and Northwestern University professor John McCarron from the Medill School of Journalism. And our phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv. And in the first hour, we've been talking about the economy and unemployment and a little bit about health care, but primarily about the economy and where it's likely to go. We've got some experts with us this evening sharing their thoughts and opinions. And we're going to talk more about that as the program unfolds. But we were also talking at the latter part of the first hour about some of the anger that is out there, and I think, you know, deservedly so, with the way that things have been happening and the way that government is responding to some of the things that are out there. And obviously, the most successful and probably the most articulate of all the talk show hosts, Rush Limbaugh, was on Fox News Sunday today, and John McCarron from the Medill School of Journalism was talking about Rush. Even though he disagrees with sort of maybe the tone of his and the politics of his rhetoric, he understands that he is a messenger and is someone who really is speaking for a lot of the anger that is out there in the country. And during the break, John Challenger, who's with us tonight, who's a business executive, made an interesting point that I want to sort of lead off our second hour of discussion. You talked about sort of an era or fear of an era of McCarthyism when I was asking you about what you think is happening in the country. And I'm wondering if you can elaborate and put that on the air, because I thought it was an interesting point.
Well, I get worried that the tone that we're moving into here in terms of the debate may be like what we saw in the 50s with McCarthyism, where there was just so much distrust and so much polarization, so it was like the center no longer held. And so what you get, you know, in a country, you know, is – and this caller at the end of the last hour talked about a distrust of government, a distrust of either party. You know, the Republicans, you know, lost a lot of kind of sense of, you know, being able to keep the country fiscally sound. We talked earlier how Paulson was just as responsible for putting in the programs to try and fix the what we saw in the banking system. Same thing now is being continued in this Democratic administration. And a lot of people are saying it doesn't matter who's in power. We just don't think they can solve the job, do the job.
Your reaction to that, John McCarron?
Oh, I agree with it totally. It's very concerning that the center seems to be emptying out. Obviously, the right is getting crowded. I guess I'm having a hard time seeing who's going left and being shrill and provocative
MSNBC?
And populist on the
MSNBC?
Left. Oh, come on. MSNBC?
Yeah.
No. It's,
MSNBC.
That's 50-yard line politics.
Oh.
That's 50-yard line.
Maybe from where you stand.
Oh, it is.
John. That's not 50-yard line politics.
Well,
that is
maybe
every
Jim
that,
Hightower. Is he still
is,
around?
That or? Is every bit. There's that is every bit as left of center as Glenn Beck is right of center. I mean, come on.
I don't buy it.
Okay, Jonathan Honig.
Well, I get most of my news and political information from the Food Network. So if Mario Batali wanted to comment on the left, the center, I mean, honestly, there is more political discussion out there, Bruce, now than there ever has been. And you're right. I mean, the news networks, the big cables are home to a lot of that. But, oh my God, there's 10,000 blogs right now chattering away about this, about Obama and Pelosi and Reid. I mean, people are having more in-depth political discussions now, talking about issues. Yes, some of it is not stuff, you know, it's personal and it's personal ad hominem attacks, but I think there's a tremendous amount of discussion right now about the political course of this
country.
No, but
I think one of the points that John was making is that, and by the way, I agree with that. I think the American people are more well-informed today than they were 20 years ago. But my question to you is, are people now, because there is an MSNBC, there is a Fox News, there have been periodicals, you know, forever, and now there's blogs on all sides. Are people only going to their blog or network of choice to get their news so that if you are a Fox person, you're never going to look at MSNBC or vice versa? And really, you have the hard edges drawn on the two sides, and no one is listening to, the middle, where there may be a combination of discussions.
Well, yeah, I paraphrase Ayn Rand, who I believe said there's two sides to every story. One is wrong and one is right. Two sides to every, philosophy. So people, in my opinion, have wide, media diets. They sample everything from MSNBC to Drudge to Fleshbot. So I think there's a lot of different opinions out there, and people eat the diet they want to eat.
Well, again, I think it's why Rush Limbaugh is so popular. He is driving people out to the right. He's forcing the left to form through an MSNBC, and it's going to push more and more people out there to the left who are just as polarized as Rush is. That's probably forming in this country. And so what we get is dialogue that's shrill on both sides, not thought out in terms of what's practical and what's pragmatic in the center, which is that's just disappearing.
Did our forefathers, did they intend news to be a business, John McCarron?
Well, it's funny you mentioned forefathers because the last time this really happened where news became a partisan commodity was back during the Jeffersonian era when, no one even pretended to be biased. It wasn't until Pulitzer came along with his this idea of objectivity and just the facts, ma'am, that we got into that.
And around the world, that's the way journalism is practiced.
We're going back to the future here in the United States of partisan journalism, and I frankly don't think that's progress.
And in fact, we're losing objectivity in journalism because the blogs are taking over. There's not going to be newsrooms to check the facts. The idea that we're going to be able to know, and have a place where we can go to get honest, straightforward. We feel like we can trust that news all the way. I'm worried that is going to get – it's an increasingly scarce commodity.
Companies compete. Brands compete on the basis of their objectivity. And, whether you believe the Wall Street Journal or New York Post, I don't think objective reporting, in my opinion, is going anywhere anytime soon.
Let's go to calls. Let's go to Mike in Spokane listening to us on KXLY. Go ahead, Mike.
Thanks, Bruce, and thank you very much for taking my call. President Obama says the recession is over, yet unemployment will probably be around 10% early next year. Some people have lost their unemployment benefits. Their extensions have ended. What happens to these people?
It's such a difficult problem because we are certainly it's not just Obama, by the way, who's declaring us out of recession. The economy grew 3.5% in July in third quarter. If it grows again in the fourth quarter, it probably will, and it may just be due to the stimulus, we'll be out of recession. We may go back in. But back to your question, it's a difficult problem for this country in the aftermath of this recession is we've got a lot of people who are unemployed, 15.2 million. That's double what it was at the beginning of the recession, and they're not finding jobs. We're not creating jobs right now at a pace that's going to put those people back to work, perhaps for several years.
And if jobs have been cut and companies are continuing to move forward and they're continuing to grow, some of those people are never going to be. Even if business gets good, people may have learned to do business with fewer people.
Well, and that happens in every recession. Businesses hone themselves. They learn to do more with less. In fact, we've seen productivity going up right through this recession. That's a sign that companies are getting their work out with fewer people, and it's going to be a while. We need small businesses to start forming and create those jobs. That's where the job creation comes from.
And people also get used to living on less, too, if you're an employee. Back shortly from Chicago, 1-800-723-8289.
Years of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $1,667 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
From Fresno, California to Worcester, Mass., you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. We'll go to calls in a moment. We mentioned a couple of times that Rush Limbaugh was on Fox News Sunday today with Chris Wallace, and he was really laying it on hard against the President of the United States, who he thinks has done, he says, "These are dark days for the country. This is deadly serious stuff. This is a total attempt to remake the country as founded and constituted, and it worries me greatly." And one specific thing that he was talking about was the health care debate. And Chris Wallace asked if there was any moral responsibility at all for the government to provide health care to those in society that did not have health care insurance. And this was Rush's response.
"There is a way to ensure the uninsured without doing any of what we're doing. If that were the objective, then I'd be full for it. This is not about insuring the uninsured. This is not about health care. This is about stealing 1/6 of the U.S. private sector and putting it under the control of federal government. And when they get this health care bill, if they do, that's the easiest, fastest way for them to be able to regulate every aspect of human behavior, because it'll all have some related cost to health care, what you drive, what you eat, where you live, what you do, and there'll be penalties for violating regulation. It's going to be the biggest snatch of freedom and liberty that has yet occurred in this country."
Your response, John McCarron?
Well, it's typical Rush. It's over the top, and I guess that's we're going to be seeing more and more of that, and maybe I guess you've convinced me that MSNBC is going to probably veer to the left in order to boost its ratings with its camp.
He also said today that one way that you can deal with those who are uninsured is use some of the unspent stimulus money, just shift it over. Is that a good idea, Jonathan Honig?
Bruce, I think it's asinine, frankly. I think it's absolutely asinine. And unfortunately, you know, even Rush, who's supposedly a spokesman for free markets, for capitalism, you know, can't offer that up as an alternative to which he's absolutely right, which is a bigger government expansion and involvement in healthcare. Just like finance, I think the belief out there, I think propagated especially by those on the left, is that free markets have failed in healthcare. The greedy insurance companies are screwing you, and we need government to take this over to allocate assets the right way. Of course, government already accounts for 50% of healthcare spending, and I think Rush is, to be honest, I think he's absolutely right. This resulting expansion of the entitlement state of making health care a right will put more and more decisions about what you do with your own body in the hands of bureaucrats and not private individuals.
Whether you are looking at the House version of the health care bill or whatever, all the variety of things that we've heard that may be in the Senate bill, although that's not yet together. There's the mandated aspect of this, and there will be fines for individuals that don't take out mandatory insurance. When Rush was asked that question today, he said that was unconstitutional. John Challenger, do you think that would pass a constitutional test?
I think it's going to be difficult to mandate those kinds of fees to people who've not signed up for it.
John McCarron.
I'm not sure about that one, but I find myself agreeing with Jonathan here because I don't want government mandates. You know, the problem with health care is, let me put it in a nutshell, it costs too much. It's not that we have 40 million uninsured because most of those people are getting their health care one way or the other. But we can't afford to go on spending year in, year out these huge increases the way we are. And I'm afraid someone has got to stand up and say we need some form of benign rationing in this country so that you can't always have an MRI or a CAT scan. Or, yes, you must use the generic equivalent. You can't insist on having the patented, more, you know, six times more expensive drug. Who's going to do that? No politician that I know is going to do that.
Well, also, from a political standpoint, it seems to me that on this particular case of mandating – is you have at the core of that, I think you have something that would absolutely destroy the Obama coalition. This wonderful coalition, this phenomenal political coalition, this historic coalition that Barack Obama was able to put together to put him in the White House. So much of that came from 18 to 34, the 18 to 34 demo group. I think once they know and they understand that their new president, who they once loved, wants to mandate that people have to have insurance and they're going to be penalized if they don't have it because most people 18 to 34 don't think they need insurance, which is part of this X million that are uninsured, depending on which number you believe. Do you agree with that, John? From a political standpoint, this is sort of like – this is stupid.
Well, this is certainly he is out there on a limb. You hit it just exactly right. That demographic is going to pay for, just like with Social Security, he's counting on that demographic to pay for a big chunk of the health care. And fiscally, I think, and just in terms of practicality as a holding your coalition together, I think it's a risky proposition.
What they find distasteful, Bruce, I think, isn't even necessarily the $500 or the $1,000. But I think it's the philosophy behind it. I mean, the healthcare reform, as it's called, is essentially based on force, forcing you to buy insurance, forcing the insurance companies to cover X groups, you know, forcing people who don't buy insurance to pay a penalty. It's not based on freedom. And I think for a lot of folks, that's a very disconcerting feeling that, you know, as Rush said, a big part of our economy is not going to be based on individuals making their own choices about their future, but on some kind of a Excel spreadsheet that's drawn up in
Washington.
And
also talking to a demographic group that may still have a little element of rebellion in them. They don't like to be. They don't necessarily like to be told what to do.
Bruce, I think they feel as if, you know, if you're a 25-year-old person, it used to be in this country that you had a right to your own life, that you weren't born with this obligation to serve the public good. But the president is saying, again, in my opinion, that you're here as a sacrifice and that whatever the country needs, whether it's solar panels, health care, it's all on your shoulders.
Greg in Schaumburg, Illinois, go ahead. You're on the air.
While I was sitting here in my topic, staying to my point, as I on the issue of McCarthyism, in my estimation, it is definitely Obama and the whole left that is more indicative of pervading McCarthyism. But John McCarron, as I was sitting on the phone waiting to get on here, why would you not be the spitting image of McCarthyism when you react to Rush Limbaugh, the articulate point-by-point-by-point person who's giving ultimate detail as to why he's objecting to something, and you just come across and say it's over the top? Why does the left always do that? Why do they always react emotionally? Why can't you people in the increasingly...
Well, because most of what he says, it just isn't true. We don't
that
have a state...
Okay, tell him how it's not true.
Do we have a state-controlled media, quote-unquote, a state-controlled media in this country?
Do we have a state-controlled media?
Yes.
In some ways, we really do.
I have no response to that.
Are you kidding?
I didn't know that. I was ignorant of the fact.
I was ignorant of the fact
that we have a state-controlled media. I just didn't know that.
Now, John, I apologize.
Thank you, John. Let's play fair. Tell us how
state
it works.
State control is quote unquote. But before the internet came along, before talk radio came along, did you guys run the show? And would you take the press releases probably without reading them and putting them out in the airwaves to us Americans out here? You bet your boots.
I'm speechless.
You want to adjust your tinfoil hat and go on? There was the
$200,000
for Janet Jackson's breasts. I guess you know you might want to put that on the list of supporting evidence.
My last point is...
Well, I think part of the point might be that if you have a broadcast license in the United States, you get your broadcast license from the federal government, from the FCC.
No. That's not what I'm going at, Bruce.
What are you referring to?
Metaphorically speaking... That, yes, do we have kind of a state-run situation, and I say that in a metaphorical sense, where there is no thought process? John McCarran is kind of evidence of the increasingly ineffective and irresponsible and just not even a factor anymore, drive-by media who just doesn't play ball. John McCarran, I'll get you on Mark Levin's show. I'll call up Mark and say, I got this dude from the Chicago Tribune in Chicago. Put him on and debating point by point. I'll bet you can't do it.
I probably wouldn't want to either.
Why not? Why not?
Because he only appears exclusively on Beyond the Beltway.
It's a family member, John?
Greg, listen, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Mike in Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing tonight, guys?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Listen, just run one thing real quick. This business of the left and right, I really believe they're two equal wings of a bird of prey. So just following up with the last caller. To my point here locally, I had a comment about the Chicago area. In the Sun-Times, they ran an article that the taxpayers are on the hook for $800 million a month in pensions alone, and they're asking seniors to give whatever extra change they have to get on the bus and punishing us by cutting services. I think it's outrageous. And I have another comment about the economy as a whole, if you'd want to chew on the first part of this a little bit.
John, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I think public employee benefits have been a real failing of our government, specifically the Democratic Party and the American left. We've just let these things build up and... We put off setting aside the money necessary to pay those pensions down the line, and down the line has arrived. So I would tend to agree with you in terms of public employee pensions and benefits.
John?
And in fact, that's going on throughout our country. It's going on at the federal government as well. But here in Illinois, it's certainly that our deficits due to pensions and other kinds of benefits is just out of control. What we've basically done is we've said we're going to spend what we want now, and we're going to cause future generations to have to pay for what we want for ourselves.
For those people listening around the country, in Illinois, if you're a senior citizen, you can ride public transportation free. This was an idea of former governor, our indicted governor, Rod Blagojevich. Now the costs are real high. And now government, the state of Illinois, needs money, and they want to take that benefit back. And the seniors are saying, hell no, I want my free ride. Back shortly from Chicago.
100 years of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2-liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let me introduce our guest this evening. John Challenger is here. He is Chief Executive Officer of Challenger Gray & Christmas. He is one of the most quoted business executives in a variety of publications all of the United States, appears on CNN and CBS, in addition to a number of the other networks. He's also a regular contributor to The Futurist magazine and has spoken at the World of Future Society. And it's not on this, but aren't you the head, or you're a Harvard graduate?
Yes.
And also, are you still the head of the Harvard Society in Chicago?
No, I've passed that on, but I still interview a lot of kids who apply to Harvard.
Very good. Also joining us this evening is John McCarron. He is an adjunct lecturer at the Medill School of Journalism. That's at Northwestern University. He spent 27 years with the Chicago Tribune as a urban affairs reporter and then as a columnist for many years, and also member of the editorial board for the last 8 years when he was there full-time, and then moved up to academia, where he's an adjunct professor at the Medill School, and also writes a monthly column that still appears in the Chicago Tribune. And, John, nice to have you with us, as always. In fact, it was about a year ago next week, that you and I did television on the night that Barack Obama was elected.
Great South Side of Chicago on 63rd Street.
We broke that news to people listening in Chicago. Jonathan Hodig also joins us. He is the managing member of Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund. That's a private investment partnership, a frequent commentator in the financial press. He's on Fox News and the business, Fox News Business, as well as smartmoney.com.
That's it.
And also capitalistpig.com.
Thank you, Bruce.
And also, you're on with Don Wade in Roma periodically on our flagship station. And in 1991, he wrote the book Greed is Good, and his website is capitalistpig.com. Just to repeat that again, 1-800-723-8289. Brian in Roselle, Illinois, you are on Beyond the Beltway. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. What I think is missing in all these conversations about the economy is we never focus on the middle third and the bottom third of the participants in the American economy. Everybody likes to talk about, you know, the rich guys on Wall Street and the bankers. And, you know, in a nutshell, basically we've pulled the rug out from under all these people. Two-thirds of Americans, I think, this NAFTA and free trade idea, you know, to equalize all the workers of the world and say that you're no different than a Chinese worker or an Indian worker or pick a country, is just asinine. And we're driving down the standard of living of the average American that, of course, no political operative wants to admit that. But in reality, that's what's going on. And I think that we're in for a long era of political instability because the politicians and the talking heads from Wall Street can no longer mask that reality. And, you know, NAFTA was sold to Americans as, well, we'll let American companies compete against Chinese companies. But in reality, what happened was American companies just closed the factories in America and moved them over to China. And then we imported the goods back, which isn't how it was sold to the average American. And I'd like to hear some comments about how the middle third and the bottom third of Americans are going to survive the next 20 years.
Jonathan Hoenig.
Well, the suggestion essentially is that, you know, free trade has hurt America, it hurts the middle class. You know, imagine that you lived on an island, you know, in which there was no trade with any other country. Everything was made on the island, everything was sold on the island, there was no trade at all. Cuba comes to mind. How good would your standard of living be? I mean, how good would American standard of living be right now if we didn't have free and open trade? In fact, free and open trade is always what's improved Americans' standard of living, even those on the lower end that he's describing. And, you know, I always make the comment, Bruce, we used to mostly be farmers in this country, 95-98% farmers. I'm pretty glad that we buy crops from Mexico, we buy, you know, soybeans from Brazil or whatever now, because now most of us don't have to be in the fields cutting down wheat anymore or picking cherries or whatever anymore. So I disagree with the premise that free trade has been anything but extremely beneficial for Americans of every social strata.
John Challenger.
Well, free trade certainly is an idea that both the Democrats was put in place during the Clinton administration, but both Republicans and Democrats have supported. And it certainly has come with a lot of pain. Lots of people have lost their jobs as we transition from a manufacturing economy into not only a service and an information technology economy, but also a global economy. We are now in a global labor market. Our workers compete with workers all over the world and their wages. That's not going to change, so we can't reverse the tides. The key, I think, for the bottom third and the middle third is education. That's what's going to make our workforce stand out, stand up in the world in the 21st century, and we need to be putting dollars and effort, energy towards programs that increase education of our people.
John McCurran.
I took an intro to economics course at Northwestern a long, long time ago from a Professor Hughes, I forget his first name, Robert maybe, and he was a tremendous free trader. And he said, you know, we'd all be better off if the Americans just made the appliances, the Italians just made the shoes, and the British made the wool jackets. And I think what he didn't see coming was that the Chinese were going to end up making everything, right? But I understand the theory of free trade. It seems the hard part is getting to fair trade. I read a small story in the paper this morning where the United States is having trouble getting American flag air carriers into China. A lot of times other countries throw up a lot of barriers to some of the things we do best, and in order to protect their markets, sometimes I wonder if we have fair trade in the world today.
If we were to turn back the clock 17 years ago, we would have heard Ross Perot talking about the downside to fair trade, the giant sucking sound from Mexico. Wasn't Ross Perot correct when we look at what he said 17 years later, John Challenger? Well, wasn't Ross Perot correct?
He certainly was tapping into anger that was occurring then at the end of a recession, just like we're maybe in the middle of a recession, just like we're at now, kind of a similar point. And we have seen tens of thousands of jobs outsourced from industries that dominated the economy the middle part of last century. They have. Manufacturing has moved, other than very specialized manufacturing, to other places around the world. But in the meantime, information technology has exploded in this country, as well as maybe in this next period of expansion. We look at what industries are going to lead us out. Maybe it's healthcare. Maybe it's global business. Maybe it's energy. All have great potential to create jobs and to reverse or at least replace a lot of the jobs that have been lost from industries that have moved elsewhere.
You are usually on this program in late December, and I always ask you every year if you were 28 years old or 38 years old, what would you be advising those who were either out of work or who were on the cusp, who thought they were going to be out of work? Where is the growth industry? Is there anything above and beyond what you've just said? Where would you be if you were advising your three young children on what they should be going into? What would you be advising them?
Well, I always think foundational jobs are great places to be. Some of those are engineering and science, computer science jobs. Every company needs computer scientists. Every company needs sales and relationship people. And every company needs accountants and financial people. And so some of the basic places to go, I think, technology, sales and marketing for relationship-oriented social children, and financial or accounting for people with math and math orientation are great places to build a career.
Let's go to Park Forest, where Jim is listening to us on WLS Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Hi. I heard one of your panelists tonight mention how important small business is to our recovery. And I just have what specifically in the stimulus package do we see that's going to do that, put that small business man, help him to get his business going? Specifically, do you have anything that you see there that will help the small businessman?
I'll venture, and I actually think it hurts the small businessman, because it's a small businessman who's paying for so much of the bailouts that he or she at the end of the day really isn't getting. And we've heard that, right, quite a bit. Small, successful, many of them profitable businesses don't have access to credit. And again, while the lights are on, the restaurants are still open, I fear that we've dumped a lot of money into saving fundamentally unsound institutions that could have been supporting small businesses.
Should we? There's been a lot of criticism that not enough of the stimulus money has been spent, that it's taken the government so long to get this money out into the economy. Is that good news or bad news, John?
Well, maybe it's a little of both, because if the stimulus helped us get 3.5% GDP growth this last quarter, and we've only spent
$160 billion.
85% is yet to be spent.
Right.
So maybe we can look forward to some more growth in the
over
future 5 years.
While
we're waiting for the private side to kick in. But in terms of small business with the stimulus, what about all the small paving companies that are throwing up these barriers and closing all the lanes all over here in the Chicago region, and I suspect all across the country? Trouble with
what
larger...
Kind of small, what kind of small business are you in, sir? Caller is gone. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the trouble with larger projects, for instance, there's talk about $8 billion for a high-speed rail system. It takes a long time to plan that and to do the engineering and to do the land condemnation or whatever you have to do for a major mega project
but,
like
but,
that.
But that's it. That, to me, is the fundamental problem here is there's that belief that spending creates wealth. And, I mean, John is the jobs expert, but it seems to me that we don't just want jobs. We actually want wealth created. And it was talked about, you know, 6 months ago. We could spend a lot of money hiring people to dig ditches and refill them again. And, yes, there's a lot of beautiful, freshly paved roads right here in downtown Chicago. Now, whether any wealth has actually been created, you know, whether we're funding the next Apple or just the old Amtrak that hasn't made a profit in 31 years, I guess that's my fear about more and more stimulus.
All right, back shortly, 1-800-723-8289. One more segment, and it's rolling up in about 3 minutes.
Inside this truck are some very special batteries, because these batteries are going to the Mattel Children's Hospital, UCLA, where they know that making kids better takes all kinds of technologically advanced equipment, and quite a few Hot Wheels and Barbies and Polly Pockets. So to power all those toys, the people at Duracell pack that truck full of batteries, because they know nothing's better than powering a smile. Duracell, trusted everywhere.
A car accident is bad enough, so that's why GEICO makes it easy to file a claim. You can do it online or over the phone. Then you go to geico.com to track your claim, view photos of the damage, or print an estimate. And for as long as you own your car, repairs are guaranteed when you use a GEICO-recommended repair shop. GEICO's easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy claim service, they call it. Okay, it's just me that calls it that.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's head to Jim, listening to us in Deerfield, which is just north of the downtown area. Go ahead, Jim. Well, I guess Jim got tired of waiting. Let's go to Jim in South Elgin. That's a long way from Deerfield. Go ahead, Jim.
Good show. You know, to the gentleman that's talking about the media, you know, not being a problem, there's a new acronym for all the other media channels called the Obama News Channel, which is... they were all joined up to form against the Fox News Channel. But that being said, Ronald Reagan has a lot of great quotes, and I'm glad that certain people in the media are reviewing history and some of his quotes when he talked about the health care bill back then or the health care issues and socialism. It's an exact carbon copy of what they're trying to do today. The government can never do things, so trying to assume all this stuff is just a disaster.
Well, certainly, you know, this... healthcare issue is going to be with us, you know, over the next several months, and I think the Obama administration, you know, people there have a sincere, authentic desire or fundamental belief that everybody has a fundamental right to healthcare. The question, you know, I think it's a sincere belief, and they're acting on it. They were elected, and they're acting on it.
No, they're
I also, in nature, sir. Excuse me?
They're socialistic in nature. Well, you know, if you want to solve health care costs, do what they did in Texas. Put a cap on pain and suffering and limit the amount that the lawyers can get off somebody else's pain and suffering, and you'll see costs go down 20 or 30%. You'll see accessibility be increased because in Texas they have a glut of doctors because there's caps on the pain and suffering part of a malpractice settlement.
Yeah, I agree. We have to fiscally handle it.
Let's go to Brian in Eureka, California, listening to us on KGOE. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say they outsourced all the technology jobs, too. I'm a computer programmer, so I don't know what your one guy's talking about on the panel.
Well, why don't you learn a new skill? You know, you were designing a web page on Mosaic 15 years ago. Why don't, you know, this notion, Bruce, that people have a right to a job, that because they used to put a nut on a fan belt in Detroit for 20 years, they have a right to do the same thing. We compete in a world global market. And, you know, I'm sorry, the sense that you have a right to a certain job and a certain way of life without ever improving your skills, I think is a fantasy.
Brian, go ahead. Elaborate.
Well, I would just like to say that I don't agree that I think all jobs will be outsourced as long as they can get a cheaper wage. I think that the first globalist trade was slavery, and we're actually seeing a comeback of that, if you ask me. If you let these people can get whatever work they want for whatever wage, they will. If you don't put a stop to it, they will. So that's what I think, and I'll take your answer offline. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Any further comment to that caller? You were the one that said technology, John.
Well, I do think technology continues to be a good source of job creation in this country. It's not all going to be outsourced. A lot of technology needs to be – technologists are needed by organizations that need that person there, and it's going to continue to be a place of great small business creation, which leads to job growth.
We've got less than 3 minutes left. We began the program by talking about the 3.5% third quarter increase in gross domestic product. In your view, John Challenger, are things going to get worse before they get better? Or do you think we're starting the slow road back?
I think we are starting a slow road back. I think it's going to be a bumpy recovery. So there are going to be continued periods of high unemployment. Again, I don't think that's we're going to see unemployment improve until late 2010. And that's happened in the aftermath of the last two recessions. And I think that growth, which right now, with businesses not investing much and consumers tapped out, we need government spending in this period of time to bridge the gap. And government spending certainly is not the long-term solution. It's the bridge to get the engine ticking again. Hopefully that will be happening by 2011. But I think it'll be a long, slow recovery. It was slow coming in, slow getting out.
Jonathan Honig, what's your look into your crystal ball insofar as recovery is concerned?
Well, you know, Bruce, what's always made this country the most for most of its history, you know, the most prosperous, the most productive. It's not that the water is so different here fundamentally than I think in Havana or in Pyongyang, but it's always been this country's commitment to individual rights and free market capitalism. So I'm glad the GDP numbers have ticked up, but to the extent that I think that we're moving away from that towards a much more pragmatic sense of anything goes, damn the consequences, we'll worry about the $10 billion or $20 billion later. I fear that any recovery is really going to be short-lived.
John McCurran, last word to you. Is potential rebellion on the horizon?
Well, certainly there's going to be an escalation of rhetoric. First on the right, I think the left is going to respond. I'm really worried that some Second Amendment goofball is going to take all this way too seriously and do something that we're all going to be sorry about in the not-too-distant future if the rhetoric just keeps getting heated up the way it is.
Are you worried about that type of climate in the country as well, that there could be violence?
Sure. I think it's a great danger. If you think back, we talked about McCarthyism in the 50s in this polarized environment. You can then look at the 60s and see all the violence and the problems that occurred there. You go to some of these cities. You go to Detroit right now with a lack of jobs there. Certainly, there's potential that if we don't get this economy moving, get people back to work, the country could face violence.
Jonathan Honig.
We vote with our feet, right, Bruce? And thankfully, we all still have the ability to, move to other countries, move to other cities. So I don't anticipate violence.
Okay. On that note, we are out of time this evening. I want to thank our guests, Jonathan Honig, the Capitalist Pig, and you can learn more about him by going to his website, which is CapitalistPig.com. John McCarron from the Medill School of Journalism has been with us. John, nice to have you with us. And John Challenger is with a Gray, Challenger Gray and Christmas. Do you have a website that people want to go to?
www.challengergray.com. Thanks, Bruce.
Okay, very good. On that note, our thanks to Ben Stewart and Tom Veracruz for their assistance in the production of this program. It's a Genevieve production in association with WLS Talk Radio. We'll be back next week at the same time. Until then, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
Introducing Ally Bank's 9-month no-penalty CD with a great interest rate of 1.5% APY. Just to make that perfectly clear, that's a no-penalty CD. No penalty for early withdrawal, medium or late withdrawal, no extra fees, no minimum balance, and no fine print anywhere. Just a high-interest 9-month no-penalty CD that lets you move all your money anytime, anywhere. It doesn't get more straightforward than that. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally, straightforward. Member FDIC.
Inside this truck are some very special batteries, because these batteries are going to the Mattel Children's Hospital, UCLA, where they know that making kids better takes all kinds of technologically advanced equipment and quite a few Hot Wheels and Barbies and Polly Pockets. So to power all those toys, the people at Duracell pack that truck full of batteries, because they know nothing's better than powering a smile. Duracell, trusted everywhere.
Wow. Whoa, what is this? A trap on our front lawn?
Yeah, it's a trap. I'm going to catch that stack of money with the googly eyes right there, the money I could be saving with Geico.
But it's right there in front of you. Just get it.
Psh, where's the fun in that? Then I wouldn't get to use these 200-pound springs or these laser sensors.
Well, it'd be a lot easier to just call Geico. I mean, it's what normal people do.
Well, then I guess I'm just more adventurous than most.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Nowadays, all sorts of people are changing their oil.
Motor oil?
Check.
Funnel?
Check.
Hey, champ, don't put the funnel on your head.
Doing your own oil change is a great way to save money. With Walmart's unbeatable prices on Castrol, Mobil 1, Pennzoil, and Valvoline, you could save even more.
All done. Piece of cake.
More people are changing their oil. With Walmart's unbeatable prices, they're changing where they get it, too. Save money, live better, Walmart. We will match the price of any local competitor's Pernod for an identical product. See store for details.